As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's go, man. Hair it, I'll do it.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, just about 5 days ago, the 49ers had 67 players on their 90-man roster. You fast forward through draft weekend, and then the Monday after that, the 49ers now have 90 players on their 90-man roster. It's filled to the brim. Anybody else who the 49ers decide to add will have to wait for a cut of a player that's currently on the 90-man roster, because 22 rookies and one veteran have joined the team in the past few days. The one veteran is Jason Verrett. The 49ers re-signed him on Monday. Intriguing pickup, one that we thought might be coming a couple months ago, but the 49ers obviously decided to bide their time. They waited to see how the ACL recovery is coming, and they almost certainly got Jason Verrett on an inexpensive flyer deal, which is the same thing that they signed him to in 2020, and that worked out quite well. But anyway, Verrett's probably one of the last things that we'll talk about today. First, we want to talk about the draft class. 9 drafted rookies, 13, at least 13 undrafted free agents for the 49ers, and they are moving forward, Matt, into a new season with a roster that, to me, I did the 53-man roster projection on Sunday, and it came down on Monday. It seems to me that the 49ers have a very, very deep team at the margins. There's going to be a position battle that rages at, I think, every single group this year. And that's exactly what you want if you're John Lynch architecting the roster. You just have to hope that iron can sharpen iron when it comes time for training camp.
Yeah, these teams all look at each other's rosters and they sort of see which teams are rich in which position, so that on cutdown day in late August or early September, those are the rosters that you pilfer. And the 49ers have a lot of those. I think defensive line and now cornerback seem like two of the deeper ones. I mean, defensive line, we've got a group that's got Eric Armstead, Nick Bosa, obviously, Jackson, Javon Kinlaw, well, Dee Ford for a little while, Samson Ebukam, Kevin Gibbons, Maurice Hurst, Kerry Hyder, Charles Omenihu, Hassan Ridgeway, Kamiko Ture, who they just signed in the run-up to the draft, and Jordan Willis. I mean, that's a lot of names, and they'll keep 10. So that's certainly one area that other teams, probably the Seahawks, are going to be paying very close attention to see who the 49ers cut. But, you know, that's a nice luxury to have, I think. So, I mean, we could go down the list a little later on at cornerback. It's almost as deep. And then, you know, running back is another spot that all of a sudden looks deep, and probably that was the biggest question mark that people had. Why use that second pick on a running back? Well, I mean, if you watched last season and you saw this team go downhill, went on that losing jag, it coincided with the fact that they were out of running backs. I mean, that was the biggest reason, I thought, that things got off kilter there. And I think it's clear that Kyle Shanahan doesn't want a repeat of that. So they, A, added another running back, and B, brought in a running back who's got some sturdiness, some girth to him, and Ty Davis Price. So I think that's largely what was behind that move. They want a guy that basically can take a pounding. As good as Elijah Mitchell was last year, and he really saved the season in a lot of ways, he also took a beating and was out a lot of games. So they need to sort of protect themselves against the injury bug, which has bitten deeply into that position in particular since Shanahan got here in 2017.
And you know who actually saved the season at running back? Debo Samuel. They that move was initially made because the 49ers had run out of players at the running back position. And it's not easy to find bodies that are competent enough to run Kyle Shanahan's system the way that the offense needs it to be run. Remember, they tried Jacquez Patrick while they're raiding other teams' practice squads around week four. None of that worked. And once the 49ers were really desperate, they moved Debo Samuel essentially full-time to the backfield for that stretch where they really, really needed that boost. And Debo was delivering an all-pro performance at running back as well as wide receiver. But when you need a literal all-pro to make things work, as the 49ers did last season at running back, you could see why they're using more valuable draft picks at that position, because it's not just interchangeable. I think there's a common fallacy out there that thinks that running back is a replaceable position. I would argue that it needs to be replaced often, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's replaceable. Every single season that the 49ers have gone through under Kyle Shanahan, it seems that by week 10, they're down to one running back on one leg. And last season, obviously, as you said, it was no exception. So they had to stuff Debo Samuel in there, and it worked out. But that certainly doesn't mean that those running backs are easily replaceable. When, I mean, now you're in a contract dispute with Debo Samuel that, you know, where one of the headlining items is his usage as a running back. So anyway, the way I look at it is Ty Davis Price was a low third-round pick. It's not like they used a one on him. He was, what, a fourth or a fifth-round projection? With a low third-rounder, at a certain point, you just have to sit back and admit that the draft is a crapshoot, and these teams are going to be selecting the players that they feel fit their system the best, and they want to make sure that they, you know, don't get usurped by another team trying to grab the same guy. And it's two straight years now that the 49ers have used a lower third-round pick on a running back, Trey Sermon in 2021 and Ty Davis Price in 2022. And neither of these two players, Matt, I mean, there's a chance that neither of them works out, right? Trey Sermon already had a fairly rough rookie season. We'll see what he does in 2022 with Trey Lance at his side. But there's a chance that he flames out. There's a chance that Ty Davis Price flames out. But in my mind, that won't change the operative truth here. And that is that it's not easy to find a running back that actually fits and produces in Kyle Shanahan's system at the level that the 49ers need for this offense to run. They're heavily, heavily reliant on this position.
Yeah, and they scrutinize that position too. I mean, they used that third rounder on Trey Sermon last year, and Trey Sermon quickly got leapfrogged by Elijah Mitchell. So you're right. I mean, it's not just a case where anybody can come in. It has to have the right stuff, and sometimes rookies don't. So that'll be something to watch with Ty Davis Price. It'll be something to watch with Sermon this year. I mean, I think the 49ers are expecting him to make a huge leap from basically being a non-entity last year. They could have really used him, and they never really tapped him in the second half of the season. It's sort of an interesting running back year because Bobby Turner usually is the guy that has all the control over that spot. He's a maniac when it comes to scouting these guys. He calls them from February through the draft to kind of gauge how responsive they are, how responsible they are, whether they'll fit in to his room. He didn't do any of that this year. He's basically not on the team right now. He's recovering from hip surgeries, and it's Anthony Lynn's room. So that whole running back core will change a little bit. I can only assume that Anthony Lynn had carte blanche, a lot of license to pick a guy that he likes. And, you know, Ty Davis Price is sort of an Anthony Lynn type of guy. Not a real fast runner, although I think he ran in the 4.4s, which is nothing to sneeze at. But a bigger bodied guy, a guy that likes contact, that likes to run over opponents, and that really fits in with the Debo Samuel, the George Kittle, the Juwan Jennings mentality. You've got a quarterback now who's going to weigh about I don't know what Trey Lance is, 230. At least has tried to run over some opponents last season. Didn't always work out for him, but there's a power element to this team that I think Ty Davis-Price fits very well into.
Well, I think the two offensive linemen that the 49ers drafted fit well into that. And I mean, we saw them go bigger along the O-line last season when they picked Aaron Banks, who was, what, 338 pounds at the Senior Bowl. And we said, whoa, maybe the 49ers are going to start to try to maul some people up front. Typically, this had been a team that had relied on smaller, nimbler, more athletic guards. But I think there's been a definite refocusing on the power, not only of the skill positions that's been at the forefront for a while now, but of the offensive line. And if you're going to be running some read option with Trey Lance, that means you're probably going to be running some out inside zone with the running backs. You're never going to take the outside zone away fully, but I think the 49ers run game is getting more multiple. And Ty Davis-Price and Trey Sermon and even Elijah Mitchell, they all fit that mold. I mean, these are running backs who weigh around 210 pounds. Davis-Price weighed 230 for LSU last year. I don't think he's going to run at 230 for the 49ers. Maybe a 220. He slimmed down to about 210 to run, you know, go through the testing circuit. But I think the prototypical 49ers running back, it's, you know, we started the Shanahan-Lynch regime with the prototypical back being 195 to 200 pounds. You think about Matt Breida at 198. I forgot how heavy Jerick McKinnon was, but obviously he hardly played for the 49ers. Now you see that weight be about 210. Now Jamichael Hasty, who's obviously lighter than the other 49ers running backs, he's exceptionally small. So I think that, I mean, you're onto something, Matt, when you talk about them wanting to toss their weight around, bruise a bit from the running back position more than they did before. And I mentioned the two offensive linemen. Well, both of these guys that the 49ers picked in this draft, first you go Spencer Burford in the fourth round out of UTSA, and then Nick Zakel out of Fordham around later. Both of them have ragdoll type of plays on their film where they're tossing guys around. I mean, they're going to need to develop more strength to be able to do that at the NFL level, but every rookie has to do that, right? The NFL is a stronger man's game. What popped off to me in the film of both linemen, Zakel and Burford, was the fact that they did bully some defenders at the college level. And that's something I didn't see from previous 49ers mid-round O-line picks like Colton McKivitz and Justin School, even Jalen Moore. I didn't see that on their tape. For Zakel and for Burford, I definitely saw it.
Yeah, and Zakel is interesting. He's sort of my Mr. Irrelevant coming out of the draft, because I just didn't know much about him, and I've been trying to learn more today. And I think the 49ers see him as a guard and perhaps as a center. They took a lot of flack for not drafting a center, although they signed a couple of undrafted guys who are intriguing. But Zakel, and I don't think it'll happen in year one for him, but you see some center qualities with him. He's got okay length. He's 6'6". I think his arms are a little over 32 inches, which is too short for a tackle. They want those guys to have really long levers. You know, 34 or 35 inches is ideal. But he's got good movement skills, and he's smart. He's coming out of Fordham with a couple of degrees. And, I think that's possible developmental type of player at that position. I don't know what his role will be in as a rookie, but you can sort of see if, let's just say that Alex Mack does retire. The name that we've previously been kind of penciling in at center has been Daniel Brunskill, but listening to Shanahan and John Lynch talk in recent weeks, they always bring up Jake Brendel as a possibility there. And I would guess that without Mack, Brendel becomes the likely starter, week one starter at center, and that would allow them to keep Brunskill at right guard, or it would allow them to have Brunskill as the sort of Johnny on the spot along the offensive line on game days, a guy that can come in and play multiple positions if there's an injury. And then you start to think, okay, all right, what's the future look like there? And then you start to look at Donovan West and this guy, Nick Zakel. They all have traits. None of them, however, are you know, highly drafted players. They don't leap out at the position. They're all guys that have to develop there. But it's a question mark moving forward. But I think that's sort of the rough blueprint that the 49ers have at the position. Obviously, they would love it if Alex Mack showed up on Wednesday and said, hey, you know what? I decided to play a 14th season here. That would make things a lot easier for them. But it does sound as if there's a plan. I don't know whether it's a good plan or not, but they do have a plan of succession in case he does decide to hang it up.
And hey, just in case, J.C. Treader, veteran still available, hasn't missed a game in 5 years, and he's conspicuously available, I think, as you wrote, Matt, a few days ago on the free agent market. Played in the system under Kevin Stefanski for the Browns. He's a plus center, maybe not quite a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro, but if the 49ers really want a proven veteran there, you go for Treader. Now, the interesting thing about Treader is that he has missed quite a bit of practice time over the past few years. He's got some knee and ankle issues, and that could be part of the holdup as to why he's not signed. So it's funny, he hasn't missed game time. He's proven very durable when it counts, but the 49ers also will, I think, highly, highly value practice time for the quarterback center battery this season if Trey Lance is under center. You're going to want your starter there for the second-year QB to work with. So that might be part of the holdup, but hey, we just saw the 49ers sign Jason Verrett to a one-year flyer deal, and if there are some concerns about J.C. Treader's longevity, then maybe he'd be down to sign a deal that's more amenable for the 49ers to fit into their salary cap situation. I just really like how this team has created multiple paths forward along the offensive line with both the draft and undrafted free agency. They didn't do anything until Saturday, right? But once they did start making moves, you can see how these moves can impact the depth chart on the roster immediately. And the one to me that is like, this can actually make a change in the short run. Spencer Burford is a polished player, way more polished than Nick Zakel, who, you know, barely saw a couple days of guard time at the Senior Bowl, right? He was a tackle that moved to guard at the Senior Bowl. And, he improved the Senior Bowl, but he wasn't really ready for it yet. Let's put it that way. So he's going to take some polishing. But in the case of Burford, I think he can make that move with the anchor that he has sooner rather than later. And if he can toss himself into that right guard competition immediately, imagine the possibilities that could open up for the 49ers if Daniel Brunskill has the flexibility to move to either center or to a swing tackle role. And then, boom, all of a sudden, if Brunskill's your swing tackle, well, then maybe a guy like Colton McKivitz doesn't make the roster, or Jalen Moore has to fight to make the roster. Then you have players like Donovan West, who are probably on the outside looking in as undrafted free agents right now. But if Alex Mack retires, in that scenario, you'd have extra room in the offensive line to have them step up and upgrade what has been a sketchy depth situation for the 49ers. So I think the goal for any team is to have its top offensive line pick compete for a starting spot. And if the 49ers get a legitimate competition from Spencer Burford, it could open up a whole lot of doors on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where these guys are lining up when we watch them in their first OTA practices later this month. I love the fact that some of these guys have position versatility, but at some point, I want to see a Jalen Moore concentrate on guard and not do a little bit of guard, a little bit of tackle. They drafted a lot of these tackles, college tackles, with the thought of moving them to guard, but they end up playing a trickle of tackle as well. McKivitz did it more. Spencer Burford was a tackle in college. Nick Zakel was a tackle in college. Some of these guys need to become guards full time in order to nail a role, or else you got this jack of all trades, master of none issue going on the O-line, which I think that's happened a bit the last couple of years. So it'll be interesting. I mean, they still need a swing tackle. I don't know where Justin School is as far as his recovery from last year's ACL. He's almost a year out from that. So it'll be interesting to see where he is. Obviously, Mike McGlinchey won't be taking part in the OTAs. as he recovers from his quad tear. So that should tell us right away who the front runner swing tackle is. And then whoever's not there, I just hope that those guys concentrate on becoming starting caliber guards, because the size and the feet obviously are there. It's just the practice. It's just the reps that that Jalen Moore, a Spencer Burford, a Nick Zakel need at that position that's going to get them into a starting role.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Well, let's go through the rest of the 49ers draft class and maybe some of the most prominent undrafted free agents that signed with the team right after the event. I know that we've already talked about Ty Davis Price, third round pick at running back. We've obviously talked about Zakel and Spencer Burford, the two O-line picks. And you mentioned at the very top of the show Drake Jackson, but he deserves, I think, a little bit more of an involved discussion because he was the 49ers' top pick in this draft. They didn't do anything on Thursday, which was the opening day, the first round. And the 49ers' inaction actually led to an active day because it meant that they were almost certainly keeping Deebo Samuel, right? If something was going to happen, it was going to happen on day one. Didn't happen on day one. The 49ers got a couple trade offers that were definite low balls. You reported the value from the Jets. What was it? It was a first rounder and some kind of pick swap that would have really screwed the 49ers.
Yeah, fifth, the Jets, if the 49ers had taken it, the Jets would have gotten Deebo Samuel and a fifth round. No, I'm sorry. Deebo Samuel and the 49ers' second rounder, the pick that they used on Drake Jackson, for the Jets' number 10 overall pick and a fifth rounder, which basically comes out to Deebo Samuel for one mid first round pick. And so the 49ers barely replied to that. It was just so far below what they what would have moved the needle for them on that. So that passed. And I believe that the Lions offer was even below that. It was the Lions number 32 overall pick plus something else. But in terms of points, it was even below what the Jets offer was. the Jets offer was pretty meager.
Yeah, and the 49ers are in the business of trying to improve the roster and, you know, perpetuate this window of contention that they're currently in. So you have to make the team better in the short run if you lose Deebo Samuel. And that's really, really hard when Deebo Samuel literally made the offense over 4x as efficient when he was on the field versus when he was off of it last season. So the 49ers are looking at these offers and they're like, well, if all we're essentially getting in return is a mid-first round pick in a draft, mind you, that was more middle to bottom heavy than top heavy, the 49ers saw no path forward. There's no way that the team doesn't go backwards in that situation if the 49ers had executed that trade. So they obviously saw their best option as keeping Deebo Samuel, hoping, being competent. I think I sensed confidence from Lynch and Shanahan this weekend that they can resolve the contractual situation. Leverage is on the 49ers side. And obviously they were happy to continue picking for the first time at number 61, where they did nab Drake Jackson. Now, he's an edge rusher out of USC, had a tumultuous college career, probably through not much fault of his own. I mean, it was tumultuous because that coaching staff wasn't very good and it got fired during his last season. A year ago, May 4th, 2021, Dane Brugler came out with his first 2022 mock draft, Matt, and he had Drake Jackson going number 7, top 10 pick. He obviously slipped down to number 61 because of what happened over the next year. But I think the 49ers firmly believe that they have somebody who's got top 10 talent in tow now, and they envision him as a bookend for Nick Bosa.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice pick because you can envision, a rookie role for him, a distinct rookie role, which would be sort of the situational pass rusher, the guy that comes in opposite Bosa on obvious passing downs. And so maybe that's 15, 20 snaps a game. That to me would be the very bottom number. When Dee Ford was healthy in 2019, he was getting close to 50% of the defensive snaps, and he was more of a specialist role as well. So there's that. But, I mean, this is a guy that is going to be around probably 270 pounds. So in this day and age, that's big for a defensive end. Nick Bosa actually has gotten down from that because he's wanted to add quickness over time. My point being is that he can be the type of every down end that Bosa is. Bosa, obviously, they like to rotate those guys in and out, so he doesn't play every down, but he's good on passing downs, he's good on running downs, et cetera, et cetera. Drake Jackson has that ability. And you've seen the videos. I mean, this guy has, I don't know if his quickness is off the charts. I think there were some players who are probably faster off the snap, but he's got really remarkable bend, fluidity, flexibility. He does backflips at the swimming pool. His sack celebrations where he does somersaults and roundoffs and all sorts of things are amazing for somebody his size. My point is that he's very, very athletic. So you get him in the weight room, you have that athleticism, he and Nick Bosa sit down and Bosa starts to kind of teach him the technique that has made Bosa one of the best pass rushers in the league. And that's why you start to see why the 49ers are so excited about this guy's future.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of those gymnastics tumbles that he was doing. I mean, it was crazy. And the fact that he can do that at 260 to 270 pounds is definitely eye-popping. I mean, it's one thing for Richie James at 185 pounds to do a celebratory backflip after the 49ers won those games in 2019. It's an entirely different thing when Drake Jackson's doing that and nearly 100 pounds heavier.
So you're saying that they're going to put Drake back there in the victory formation when they're winning these games? That would be awesome if they did.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, Jason Poe, the undrafted free agent out of Mercer, who has advertised himself as both a center and a fullback because he runs a 4.9 40. Talk about guys who are able to do stuff at their weight that shouldn't be able to do that at that weight. There's Drake Jackson, who should be in the victory formation. I think that's a great idea, Matt. But Jason Poe is extremely intriguing to me. And that, you know, you mentioned it in your UDFA piece on The Athletic yesterday. Everybody should subscribe to The Athletic. Check out Matt's Pete's on the undrafted free agency, ranked all 13 of them. Poe has his shorter arms, so he's probably not the most legitimate offensive line prospect, and that's probably why he's trying to brand himself and why he did brand himself as an offensive weapon as well. And he showed on this video that he posted on Twitter these routes that he's running. And the guy's 300 pounds, and he runs smooth routes. He's got soft hands, and you know, speaking of big guys in positions that you don't expect big guys to be in, if he somehow makes the roster as a backup offensive lineman, or even the practice squad as a backup offensive lineman, what's going to stop Kyle Shanahan from having the occasional package play with a 300-pound fullback?
And nothing.
So that's awesome, right? I mean, the 49ers are trying to bruise other teams. They're trying to upsize with muscle on the perimeter while defenses are downsizing, right? Deebo Samuel knocking people's mouth guards out. Kyle Juszczyk doing stuff all over the field. Jason Poe could be the next step. I don't care if it's only for two snaps a season, but there's got to be two snaps where you could fit in a 300-pounder to work against the 170-pound corner.
Yeah, I would love to see a goal line formation where Kyle Juszczyk is lined up at his traditional fullback spot, but Jason Poe, what is he, 6 feet, 300 pounds? I mean, this guy is like a boulder. He's like a huge bowling ball is behind him, and then they run behind Trent Williams on the left side and pound the ball through. So I wonder, I mean, there's no way that Kyle Shanahan watches this guy's tape and doesn't sort of fantasize about the things that he can do with him. Jason Poe has to make the team, A, and then he would have to be in uniform on game days. So he needs to have a different role. And it'll be interesting to see him up close. Just how much smaller is he than the other centers? I mean, there are centers in this league that aren't huge guys. I grew up with watching Jeff Bostic in Washington. He was a member of the Hogs. He wasn't that much bigger than 6 feet, 300 pounds. Weston Richburg was well under 300 pounds. He's around, you know, 280, 290 when he was with the 49ers. So you don't have to be massive to be a center. It helps. Alex Mack is a big guy, and you saw him. You saw that size, the effectiveness of that size this year. I wonder if Jason Poe could be a defensive tackle, that type of guy. He sort of has the same build as Kalia Davis, one of their sixth-round picks. So I think it's a case of, let's just get this guy in the building and see what we can make of him.
So much of how a player projects in the trenches is related to that arm length. And I guess at every position, arm length is a big deal in football. And that's the one thing that's, I think, going to hold Jason Poe back. But the versatility, the ability to run at that weight, that's the one thing that could propel him forward. So it's going to be fascinating. And we have to remember, this is a good reminder for dealing with any discussion about the 49ers roster. It's not just about the 53-man. That practice squad, especially since it expanded 2 seasons ago, is as much of a taxi squad and a developmental squad as anything. And you know, linebacker, the 49ers have Aziz Alshire and Dre Greenlaw entering their final seasons under contract. It's very, very hard to see them re-signing both of those players past 2022. So I could even see a scenario in which they don't re-sign any of them. So the two linebackers they picked up in undrafted free agency, Jeremiah Gemmel out of North Carolina, then Olubi out of San Diego State, who runs that 4.44 40, both of those guys are, they have the initial inside track to be the practice squad developmental candidates that, if they impress the 49ers enough this season, they can be the replacements for Greenlaw and Alshire. So it's not just about the 53 for guys like Poe and for guys like I always struggle with his name, Olubi. Poe, Olubi, Jeremiah Gemmel. I mean, this is about the holistic look at the roster for years to come. And I think that's why it's important for us to look at both the 9-person draft class and that 13-player undrafted free agent class, Matt.
Yeah, I looked at a lot of those undrafted guys. I'm forgetting which day of the week it is, but I think it was Sunday that I was doing this. And Jeremiah Gemmel from North Carolina probably jumped out the most on tape. I mean, he just looks like an NFL linebacker. He reminds me a lot of Fred Warner, because he's a little bit taller and he's got really long arms and just kind of flies around the field. His story, the reason he went undrafted, is he injured a shoulder ligament in September and played through the whole season with it, which is courageous in itself. And then he had the choice of, okay, do I get this taken care of in January, or do I go and play in the Senior Bowl and then go to the Combine? And if I do that, I'll probably get drafted, but then I'll have to get the surgery and it'll affect me in the spring when I arrive with one of these teams. Well, he chose the alternate path. He got the surgery done right away, which meant no Senior Bowl, no Combine, nobody has a 40 time on him, nobody has this, that, or the other, and so he goes undrafted. But, you know, he could easily end up on the 53-man roster, or certainly on the practice squad. And then, as you noted, the 49ers will probably keep one of Aziz Alshire or Dre Greenlaw, but not both, in which case they would need a strong side linebacker, a sort of an heir apparent. And I think this guy has got it. I mean, he's smart enough, you know, real leader on the team. They called him the general at UNC. And he could either be the weak side guy, or if Fred Warner gets hurt, he could be the the Mike, the guy that wears the green dot. So he's a really, I mean, that's sort of the under the radar, I think, signing there. And then, yeah, the other two guys that jumped out were the receivers. And I think that's where, you know, the 49ers' depth or lack thereof at that position really sort of helped them, ironically, is that these agents all know the chances their clients will have of making a team when they go undrafted. And the 49ers were a team that if you were representing a good wide receiver, you had the 49ers circled. And so they added a couple of guys who very prolific in college. Let's see, Tay Martin at Oklahoma State led this Oklahoma State in receiving this past year. Reminds me of Kendrick Bourne. It actually looks a little bit better than Kendrick Bourne as far as his college tape. And then Tasir Mack, who was Kenny Pickett, the only first-round quarterback, his favorite target at Pitt. And he's got size, good speed. I mean, you watch these guys and you wonder, why didn't this guy get drafted? Part of it is John Lynch's point that he kept making in the run-up to the draft, is that there were a lot of guys in this year's draft class because of COVID, and a lot of guys played five seasons in college, and this was the season that some of those five-year guys came out. And so that pushes a Tasir Mack, a Tay Martin out of the draft, and the 49ers benefited from that.
There's these loud sirens right outside right now. So
yeah, David, are you robbing a bank right now?
They're coming after me. They're coming after me here in Redwood City. I seem to be on this street where they pass quite often. Maybe I'm right by the fire department or something. But I'm not in trouble. I'm still here. I'm ready to finish the podcast. We got a few more minutes to go. And I'm thinking about the fact that this draft class was so deep and so middle to bottom heavy that it just didn't make sense for the 49ers to trade up. And remember, John Lynch talked about the fact that they were on the phone a couple times thinking about trading up, and both times they were like, wait, we're what? Well, if we're four picks away and there's still like 10 players on the board that we would really like at this pick, why should we trade up? Because there's a chance, there's a certainty that somebody that we really like is going to be available when we come onto the clock. So the 49ers didn't trade up. They made all nine picks. They made 13 undrafted free agent signings. And a lot of these UDFA signings, as you said, look to have been very draftable players. And it just so happened to be a deep year for the draft. And it worked out well for the 49ers because they had traded for Trey Lance in 2021 and only had those middle round picks. They started at number 61 and then went down through the seventh round. Mr. Irrelevant was one of their picks. The final one of the 2022 draft, number 262, went to Brock Purdy, quarterback from Iowa State. Now, being Mr. Irrelevant, Matt, comes with some perks. In June, after OTAs are done, Brock Purdy is going to get a custom-made surfboard. And he's going to get to surf at Newport Beach, and he's going to get to go to Disneyland. The last pick of the draft, Mr. Irrelevant, goes through this whole pomp and circumstance every year. So to me, it doesn't sound like a bad deal at all.
Well, I don't know. Standing in line at Disneyland seems like more of a chore than
I would
a perk.
Think it comes with a fast pass. Come on.
And then you get the glare of all the parents and kids as you kind of skip them in line. It's interesting because in hearing Kyle Shanahan talk about why Purdy was the selection, I went back to C.J. Beathard. I know that Shanahan mentioned Nick Mullins quite a bit as a comp, but it also sounded a lot like what Shanahan said about Beathard, which was we saw him do in college what we're going to ask him to do in the NFL. So it's not that huge a projection. Played a lot of snaps, played a lot in the pocket, this, that, and the other, which all makes absolute sense. Where it's interesting, though, is that the guy that they took last year at the position, Trey Lance, didn't have a lot of experience doing that. He did play in the pocket, of course, but the scouting report on Lance is that he just didn't have a lot of attempts, a lot of time back there. So, the highest quarterback they've ever taken has an entirely different background than the guys that Shanahan felt very comfortable taking in previous years. I don't know what the moral of that story is. I don't have a sweeping conclusion here, but I just thought it was interesting that that dichotomy, quarterback dichotomy, exists.
Why don't we wrap this up by talking about the secondary? This is what we opened the show with, so I think this will bring it nice and full circle. The 49ers re-signed Jason Verrett on Monday. Nice flyer deal for a team that sought to create true competition in the cornerback room this offseason, and I think the 49ers have absolutely accomplished that. They drafted two defensive backs as well, and they also signed three safeties right after the draft. But the two draftees, Tariq Castro-Fields, who is a really toolsy corner from Penn State, 4'4", 200-plus pounds, smart guy. I mean, I asked him who he models his game after, and the first name that came out of his mouth was Richard Sherman, so that's always a good thing. And then a round ahead of Castro-Fields in the fifth, the 49ers picked up Samuel Womack, who is a 5'9 nickelback out of Toledo. But speaking of Richard Sherman, Samuel Womack has the arm length and wingspan of Richard Sherman, who's 6'3". So he's 5'9", which you want that. You actually want the slot corners to be shorter so they're more agile to take on the shorter slot receivers. But you always want the long arms. And Samuel Womack absolutely has those long arms. Plus, he can fly. He's a 4'4 guy in the 40. So to me, I think that this is their definite nickel of the future. They obviously lost Kaywan Williams in free agency. But I wonder now in the big picture, Matt, how the 49ers are going to play this at nickel in 2022, at least to begin the season, because Womack's a rookie. So maybe he doesn't start week one. But now that Jason Verrett's in the fold, if he's healthy enough by week one, he's a sticky corner. He's a really good player. Charvarius Ward, Jason Verrett, Emmanuel Mosley, Ambry Thomas. You know, either Mosley or Thomas, one of those two guys could probably kick inside, play some slot to buy some time for Samuel Womack to get ready.
Yeah, I mean, we asked Fred Warner this the other day, and he raised the name Darquez Dennard as the nickel right now, which is probably the case. I mean, they're not practicing, but I'm just saying that he's another option there. I mean, for me, I sort of see it as Verrett beginning the season on some sort of injury list. I forget which one makes the most sense for a guy coming off a 2021 injury. But he works his way back by midseason, and then all of a sudden, the 49ers, for eight games and perhaps a playoff run, have a fully healthy Jason Verrett who hasn't been worn down by the season like somebody else. So they have absolutely an embarrassment of riches there. I mean, they had to really fight to get this guy, Quantrez Knight, from UCLA. He's bounced around everywhere. He started at Maryland, went to Toledo, I believe, and then went to UCLA. But he plays sort of that, you know, all these colleges have different names for it. UCLA calls it the striker, which is basically the nickel cornerback, but they end up blitzing quite a bit, making, you know, sort of a quasi linebacker defensive back. He's a possibility too. So, it went from a position that was a little bit weak heading into the draft to all of a sudden they're kind of teeming with cornerback possibilities. I mean, Tariq Castro-Fields plays at Penn State, plays those Ohio State running backs all the time. Those are Ohio State receivers. He's battle tested. He's played in big games. He's not going to be daunted by the competition this spring and summer. So it's going to be really interesting to see where those guys line up and where they end up at the end of training camp.
Yeah, for the 49ers, we talk about how deep the defensive line room is. That it's not as deep in the secondary, but boy, it is stocked this year with some talent that should make these competitions interesting. The primary difference being 2021, the 49ers had Jason Verrett on the roster, but they were reliant on him being healthy, right? 2022, they have Jason Verrett on the roster, but he's just the icing on the cake. They're definitely not reliant on Jason Verrett being healthy, and I think there's a massive difference between those two positions. Anyway, we're going to be with you guys a lot more often. We have this new feature called Live Rooms on The Athletic that Matt and I will be running with quite a bit. So be sure to always be checking out the latest audio content that we have for you. And obviously be sure to subscribe to the page. That's our quick draft recap. We'll have much more soon. For Matt Barrows, this is David Lombardi. This is the Here's the Catch podcast. We'll talk to you all soon.